This is Resonance 104.4 FM. Flipping marvellous. How are you? I am Nick Hennigan and I can't help it. Blame me mother and me father. Yes, I'm Nick Hennigan and welcome to another slice of Literary London. And as you may be able to hear, I'm once again in a pub. Yeah, it's summer. It's summer here in the United Kingdom, and obviously very rarely rains in London, but when you get a sunny night, you kind of want to go out into it, don't you? Yes. So I'm sitting outside on a very balmy evening in June, talking to you about our request show, because we're also celebrating the passing away of a very famous writer. Can you guess who it is? Famous London writer. Possibly the most famous London writer of all time. Yes, I'm talking about Charles John Hotham Dickens, born on the 7th of February in 1812 and passed away on the 9th of June 1870. And we're going to be having a look at one of his short stories later on. He's not known for his short stories, but he did rather well at it. Oh, yes, he did. We're also, of course, as I mentioned last time, taking your requests. And let's kick off straight away a literary request. I had an email in the week from Heather in Hebden Bridge. It's up north of London, Hebden Bridge, and she said, "Would you play one of the Dylan Thomas poems with the lovely music underneath?" I think I know what you're talking about, Heather. This is for you.
Now as I was young and easy under the apple boughs, about the lilting house and happy as the grass was green, the night above the dingle starry, time let me hail and climb, golden in the heydays of his eyes, and honoured among wagons I was prince of the apple towns, and once below a time I lordly had the trees and leaves trail with daisies and barley down the rivers of the windfall light. All the sun long it was running, it was lovely, the hay fields high as the house, the tunes from the chimneys. It was air and playing, lovely and watery, and fire green as grass. And nightly under the simple stars, as I rode to sleep, the owls were bearing the farm away. and honored among foxes and pheasants by the gay house, under the new-made clouds, and happy as the heart was long, in the sun born over and over, I ran my heedless ways. My wishes raced through the house high hay, and nothing I cared at my sky blue trades, that time allows in all his tuneful turning, so few and such morning songs, before the children green and golden follow him out of grace. Nothing I cared in the lamb-white days that time would take me up to the swallow-thronged loft by the shadow of my hand in the moon that is always rising. Oh, as I was young and easy in the mercy of his means, time held me green and dying. Though I sang in my chains like the sea.
Ah, wasn't that lovely? A slice of Dylan Thomas there. You heard the voice of Tom Hollander reading As I Was Young and Easy. With music by Debbie Wiseman. If you ever watch Father Brown on the telly, or in fact, what's the other one? There's a couple of shows that Debbie writes theme tunes for, and she's a great talent. That was especially for Heather in Hebden Bridge, and it was taken from a film called A Poet in New York. And if you like Dylan Thomas, I suggest you try and track it down, because not only is it a jolly good film, it's also been executive produced by Griff Rhys-Jones, of course, who's a friend of this programme, I think is the way we put it. And I was going to... I spent quite a lot of time in Griff's kitchen in Fitzrovia when he lived on Fitzroy Square. I can tell you that now, because he doesn't live there anymore. He's moved. And he's a lot to say about Dylan Thomas, and you can see why. And, of course, we just got back from a couple of weeks in Wales, checking out sort of the Dylan Thomas trail. And, his legend lives on. I'm Nick Hennigan. This is Resonance 104.4 FM. If you'd like to get in touch, as always, you can get us radio@mavericktheatre.co.uk. radio@mavericktheatre.co.uk. Or we've got a new email now because of the new website, bohemianbritain.com. You can also get me on Nick, N-I-C-K, at bohemianbritain.com. Hey? That works, doesn't it? Nick@bohemianbritain.com. And this is a request show, and someone that has done that is John in Chelsea. John said, you played a choir song, so it's not really literature, but a show that you saw in Edinburgh. I think what you're talking about is a rather brilliant show called Choir of Man. And it's also very topical, because I've just found out this week, in fact yesterday, that we have funding in place for a new play that I'm going to be taking to the Edinburgh Festival this year in August 2023, depending on when you're listening to this. I mentioned it as well, I think, when we went through our Frankenstein show a couple of weeks ago. Yes, it's going to be called The Birth of Frankenstein. I'm working on the script almost as we speak. Well, except I'm not, because I'm talking to you. You know what I mean? Yeah. But I'm working on the script, and we're going to be, for the first time, I'm still doing the rounds, actually. There are one or two big players in the Edinburgh, in the Edinburgh Fringe. We've been with Assembly for years and years and years. And then, for various reasons, we went with Underbelly, who were gorgeous. They were a lovely group, a great bunch of people. They've also just taken over the Boulevard Theatre in Soho. More about that, perhaps. If you know the Boulevard Theatre, it's sort of, it's in Soho. They're now going to call it the Underbelly Boulevard. And they're a really great bunch. But this year, we're with Pleasance. And the Pleasance, of course, is another operator. They have a theatre... a theatre in North London. And they also run numerous venues around Edinburgh for the Festival Fringe. And we're in one of them. And it's quite appropriate, I think, given that it's called The Birth of Frankenstein. We're actually in a venue called The Cellar. Well, except not American. Yes, The Cellar at 12:30, half past 12 in the afternoon. That's sort of not too early to frighten yourself. And it looks at the time when Mary Shelley and, Percy Shelley and Lord Byron went away for a holiday, and it gave birth to what we now know as Frankenstein. It also gave birth to what we now know as Dracula, as a sort of a side issue. How, I hear you cry. It's all right, don't cry. You'll have to come and see the play in Edinburgh to find that. Although, if you can't make Edinburgh, I'm also putting together plans for national and possibly international tours, actually. We've had interest from an American theatre with one of the plays that I wrote a while ago. So, it's all kind of going on. And John is absolutely quite trite. John in Chelsea. They're actually called a choir. And it's a great show, and I think they're going to be in Edinburgh again, and I have no hesitation at all in playing this for you by request, John in Chelsea.
Most pubs have a football team, a darts team, an intimidatingly vast array of weirdly named real ales. Chaps? This pub has a choir, always has, and we are the current class. We are the Choir of Man.
Go and close the curtains, 'cause all we need is candlelight, you and me, and a bottle of wine. Gonna hold you tonight,
Well, we know we're going away, and how I wish it weren't so.
So take this wine and drink with me.
Let's delay our misery.
Oh, so wait.
So wake me up.
Chance to travel the world, but I don't have any plans.
So wake me up when it's all over.
Fun, isn't it? The Choir of Man and Wake Me Up. In fact, they put the two songs together, you know, Save Tonight and Wake Me Up. You heard that though, didn't you? I don't know if they're at the Edinburgh Festival this year or not, but I shall be there for the month of August. And if you've got a show on there, then do let me know, because I shall be talking to people and doing interviews, as I've done many years in the past. We sometimes video them as well, film them, so we can put the video element on YouTube as well. So if you've got a show at the Edinburgh Festival this year, at the Edinburgh Fringe, then please do let me know. Nick@mavericktheatre.co.uk. Nick@mavericktheatre.co.uk. sorry, radio@mavericktheatre.co.uk. I should know my own, yes, and I was going to say nick@bohemianbritain.com. nick@bohemianbritain.com, that's if you've got a radio show. Sorry, you've got a show at the Edinburgh Fringe. Dearie me, I'm in the pub, I've only literally had half of a pint, I promise. However, that was for John in Chelsea, and Louise in Newcastle has been in touch, and she said, could you play one of Charles Dickens' short stories? Because I think we're celebrating an anniversary, and you're absolutely right, Louise. Charles Dickens, Charles John Hoffman Dickens, born 7th of February 1812, he passed away on the 9th of June in 1870. And so known, of course, for his famous shows, and I've actually adapted a one-person version of A Christmas Carol, which fortunately goes great guns for about the last 4 or 5 years. It's gone out, it obviously didn't during, or in fact, during the lockdown, we actually did a film version of it from a theatre in Nottingham, I believe. I couldn't go because we were in lockdown, you know. But it's also toured the UK. It's going to be out again in December this year, Christmas time. It's also toured the USA as well. So I'm a big fan of Charles Dickens. And he's not really known for his short stories. So Louise said, could you play one of his short stories? Preferably, she said, could you play Mr. Testator's Visitation. I've only had a half a bite. Yes, Mr. Testator's Visitation. And do you know what, Louise, in Newcastle? I can. And guess what? Here it is.
Mr. Testator took a set of chambers in Lyon's Inn when he had but very scanty furniture for his bedroom and none for his sitting room. He had lived some wintry months in this condition and had found it very bare and cold. One night, past midnight, when he sat writing, and still had writing to do that must be done before he went to bed, he found himself out of coals. He had coals downstairs, but had never been to his cellar. However, the cellar key was on his mantel shelf, and if he went down and opened the cellar it fitted, he might fairly assume the coals in that cellar to be his. As to his laundress, she lived among the coal wagons and Thames watermen, for there were Thames watermen at that time, in some unknown rat hole by the river, down lanes and alleys on the other side of the Strand. As to any other person to meet him or obstruct him, Lyon's Inn was dreaming, drunk, maudlin, moody, betting, brooding over bill discounting or renewing, asleep or awake, minding its own affairs. Mr. Testator took his coal scuttle in one hand, his candle and key in the other, and descended to the dismalest underground dens of Lyon's Inn, where the late vehicles in the streets became thunderous, and all the water pipes in the neighbourhood seemed to have Macbeth's Amen sticking in their throats, and to be trying to get it out. After groping here and there among low doors to no purpose, Mr. Testator at length came to a door with a rusty padlock which his key fitted. Getting the door open with much trouble and looking in, he found no coals, but a confused pile of furniture. Alarmed by this intrusion on another man's property, he locked the door again, found his own cellar, filled his scuttle, and returned upstairs. But the furniture he had seen ran on casters across and across Mr. Testator's mind incessantly when, in the chill hour of 5 in the morning, he got to bed. He particularly wanted a table to write at, and a table expressly made to be written at had been the piece of furniture in the foreground of the heap. When his laundress emerged from her burrow in the morning to make his kettle boil, he artfully led up to the subject of the cellars and furniture, but the two ideas had evidently no connection in her mind. When she left him, and he sat at his breakfast, thinking about the furniture, he recalled the rusty state of the padlock, and inferred that the furniture must have been stored in the cellars for a long time, was perhaps forgotten, owner dead perhaps. After thinking it over for a few days, in the course of which he could pump nothing out of Lyon's Inn about the furniture, he became desperate and resolved to borrow the table. He did so that night. He had not had the table long when he made up his mind to borrow an easy chair. He'd not had that long when he made up his mind to borrow a bookcase, then a couch, then a carpet and rug, By that time he felt he was in furniture stepped in so far as that it could be no worse to borrow it all. Consequently, he borrowed it all and locked up the cellar for good. He had always locked it after every visit. He'd carried up every separate article in the dead of night, and at the best had felt as wicked as a resurrection man. Every article was blue and furry when brought into his rooms, and he'd had, in a murderous and guilty sort of way, to polish it up while London slept. Mr. Testator lived in his furnished chambers 2 or 3 years or more, and gradually lulled himself into the opinion that the furniture was his own. This was his convenient state of mind when late one night a step came up the stairs and a hand passed over his door feeling for his knocker. And then one deep and solemn rap was rapped that might have been a spring in Mr. Testator's easy chair to shoot him out of it, so promptly was it attended with that effect. With a candle in his hand, Mr. Testator went to the door and found there a very pale and very tall man, a man who stooped, a man with very high shoulders, a very narrow chest, and a very red nose. A shabby, genteel man. He was wrapped in a long, threadbare black coat, fastened up the front with more pins than buttons, and under his arm he squeezed an umbrella without a handle, as if he were playing bagpipes. He said, "I ask your pardon, but can you tell me..." and stopped, his eyes resting on some object within the chambers. "Can I tell you what?" asked Mr. Testator, noting his stoppage with quick alarm. "I ask your pardon," said the stranger, "but this is not the inquiry I was going to make. Do I see in there any small article of property belonging to me?" Mr. Testator was beginning to stammer that he was not aware when the visitor slipped past him into the chambers. There, in a goblin way which froze Mr. Testator to the marrow, he examined first the writing table and said, "Mine." Then the easy chair, and said, "Mine." Then the bookcase, and said, "Mine." Then turned up a corner of the carpet, and said, "Mine." In a word, inspected every item of furniture from the cellar in succession, and said, "Mine." Towards the end of this investigation, Mr. Testator perceived that he was sodden with liquor, and that the liquor was gin. He was not unsteady with the gin, either in his speech or carriage, but he was stiff with gin in both particulars. Mr. Testator was in a dreadful state, for, according to his making out of the story, the possible consequences of what he had done in recklessness and hardihood flashed upon him in their fullness for the first time. When they had stood gazing at one another for a little while, he tremulously began, "Sir, I am conscious that the fullest explanation, compensation, and restitution are your due. They shall be yours. Allow me to entreat that without temper, without even natural irritation on your part, we may have a little drop of something to drink," interposed the stranger. "I am agreeable." Mr. Testator had intended to say, "a little quiet conversation," but with great relief of mind, adopted the amendment. He produced a decanter of gin, and was bustling about for hot water and sugar, when he found that his visitor had already drunk half the decanter's contents. With hot water and sugar, the visitor drank the remainder before he'd been an hour in the chambers, by the chimes of the Church of St. Mary in the Strand. And during the process, he frequently whispered to himself, "Mine." The gin gone, and Mr. Testator wondering what was to follow it, the visitor rose and said with increased stiffness,
"At what hour of the morning, sir, will it be convenient?"
Mr. Testator hazarded.
At 10?
Sir, said the visitor,
at 10 to the moment I shall be here.
He then contemplated Mr. Testator somewhat at leisure and said,
God bless you. How is your wife?
Mr. Testator, who never had a wife, replied with much feeling, deeply anxious, poor soul, but otherwise well. The visitor thereupon turned and went away, and fell twice in going downstairs. From that hour, he was never heard of. Whether he was a ghost, or a spectral illusion of conscience, or a drunken man who had no business there, or the drunken rightful owner of the furniture with a transitory gleam of memory, whether he got safe home, or had no home to get to, whether he died of liquor on the way, or lived in liquor ever afterwards, he never was heard of more. This was the story received with the furniture and held to be as substantial by its second possessor in an upper set of chambers in Grim Lion's Inn.
Ah, old Charles Dickens. He knew a bit, didn't he? Eh? Not a bad storyteller. That's Mr. Testator's Visitation. Yeah. I am in a pub, but I can't, you know, I've only had a half pint. And you know why now? Coming out with stuff like that. And that was to celebrate or commiserate the fact that we lost Charles Dickens on the 9th of June, 1870. And that was suggested very cleverly by Louise in Newcastle. Thank you very much, Louise, and I hope you enjoyed that. And that's more or less it. That's all kind of all we've got time for. So I'll just remind you as well, if you'd like to get in touch, we do these request shows every now and again. So if there's a particular piece of literature that you'd like to hear, either a poem or a story, then get in touch. Similarly, if you're taking a show to the Edinburgh Fringe Festival this year in August and you'd like me to come and say hello and we can have a chat on this show, then also get in touch. The address is... Again, radio@mavericktheatre.co.uk, radio@mavericktheatre.co.uk, or nick@bohemianbritain.com, nick@bohemianbritain, one word, .com. So, yeah, do get in touch. It'd be nice to touch base and say hello. And if you're going to be at Edinburgh anyway and you haven't got a show, then also get in touch and we'll have a party. We'll have a literary London party up there. That sounds like a good idea, doesn't it? Because it can be a slog, Edinburgh. Like I say, I'm working on the script for our show, The Birth of Frankenstein. I've got to stop saying that voice because it's not American at all. It's a very English story, The Birth of Frankenstein. Working on the script at the moment. Who knows where that will end up, but I'm sure it'll be good. And if you'd like to find out about Edinburgh, if you'd like to... listen to interviews I've done in the past, then they're all on the radio player here, or have a look at bohemianbritain.com, the website bohemianbritain.com, and just scroll through the archives. Even in lockdown, I went to the Edinburgh Fringe, and there's some great stuff there, even though I do say so myself. It's the world's biggest open arts festival. So, there's lots to be done. And so from my pub here in Hammersmith, across Keys, thanks very much for your hospitality outdoors under a summer sky. That's all I got time for. I shall see you next time. Have a fantastic week. I'm Nick Hennigan. This is Resonance 104.4 FM.